This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. They'll make sure you're fully insured, save you money wherever they can, because customer service means everything. That's why they're the best in the business. They actually go way beyond in caring about you and your needs. It's all at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Todd, as I mentioned, whenever we're on the road, we always talk about the Sunbury Motors studio being mobile. Well, tomorrow, the Sunbury Motors studio will actually be at Sunbury Motors, because I'm out. Because tomorrow we are vehicle hunting, and we're going there. All right. Bo Smolka joins us. Bo's going to talk about the Ravens, their draft, and how they set up. First of all, Bo, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Oh, thanks. Good to talk to you.
All right. So, the Ravens, in fact, already signed their first-round pick. I mean, they're the first ones to do so. They went corner at that spot out of Clemson. What were your thoughts?
So it seemed like a very kind of purposeful pick by Eric DaCosta. He had told us before the draft that the wide receiver group and the offensive line group, both of which are positions of need on this team, were considered fairly deep in this draft. The cornerback group, he thought, was fairly good at the top end, but not as deep. And he said the night after they picked Nate Wiggins out of Clemson that if they felt if they didn't get a cornerback in the first round, they probably weren't going to get one that could be an immediate impact guy. So I think they felt a sense of urgency at that point in the draft. If there's a good corner we like, we're gonna hit that position now. And he implied that they had Nate Wiggins picked ranked among their top 20 players, and they got him, you know, deeper than that. So they saw him as a value pick. He's a need pick, and I think they really like the pick. So yeah. That's what struck me the opening night, was that they went after a cornerback. It's a position they always seem to need, and I remember him talking about how the depth wasn't there at cornerback, so it didn't surprise me that they got their guy there.
Well, not only that, I think the way the draft played out with the first 14 picks being offensive players, I think that allowed a guy like Wiggins to fall to the Ravens, and they didn't have to make any moves to do it.
That's exactly right. And I know they wanted to get an offensive lineman, and they did in the next round, but as you said, it was such an offensive-heavy draft, and I'm sure they loved as that draft board was falling the way it did in the first half of the draft. Because let's face it, when you're picking there at number 30, you're waiting all night to make a pick. Yeah. And you don't know what's going to happen before you. And I think they probably loved the fact that there was a run on the offensive players, because I think they did expect that maybe one of these guys that they identified that they could get on defense would be there, and he was.
That's okay. They waited around all night around the 30 spot before, and they got some guy named Lamar Jackson. That was pretty good. Roger Rosengarten. Washington had a lot of players drafted, and they had that offensive line drafted. What did the Ravens like about him in the 62-hole?
Well, I think, first of all, they liked that he's a right tackle. He had started his career at Washington as a left tackle, and they moved him to the right side because Michael Penix was a left-handed quarterback, and they wanted him on Penix's blind side. Yep. So they basically need a starting right tackle. They traded away Morgan Moses after the season. They have a third-year tackle named Daniel Faalele who might be in the mix, but they were looking, if they could get out of this draft with a guy that they could be a presumptive rookie starter at tackle, would be a really good hit for them. And they like Rosengarten, and Eric DaCosta told us after they made that pick that Rosengarten was a guy they identified when the second round started, he was a guy they were hoping would be there. And again, they were picking late in that round, so a lot of things will happen before you pick. And he also said that they had options, they had offers, a lot of offers to trade out of that pick and trade back and acquire other picks. And DaCosta generally loves to do that. He's a wheeler and a dealer, and he just likes to stockpile more picks. But I think he also feared that if they backed off that by even a couple spots, Rosengarten wouldn't be there anymore. So he turned down some of those trade offers, and they got a guy from Washington, as you said, who I think will enter training camp as the presumptive starter at right tackle. He'll have to win it, as John Harbaugh always says, because he doesn't really like to hand starting jobs to rookies. But I think Rosengarten's a guy they think that can start at right tackle right away. And as I said, the fact that he played right tackle at Washington, especially with Michael Penix being a lefty, was a big factor in that.
All right. This is a team that likes to keep fresh outside guys on the field. They did a couple things, both involving Penn State. Number one, they picked up the fifth-year option on Adafe Owe, and they drafted Adisa Isaac. Your thoughts on both of those moves with the Penn State players?
So, to be honest, I was surprised they picked up the option on Owe. And Owe is a guy that has a lot of promise, but I'll be honest, he's taken a lot of criticism here over the years because the production hasn't matched the potential. And I say that based on the total number of sacks, which is how people tend to measure edge rushers. He's got 13 in 3 years as a first-round pick. That seems underwhelming. Now, they will say Owe does a lot of stuff that doesn't get registered in the stat sheet, and he makes quarterbacks move off the spot and someone else gets the sack. And so they say all the right things about him, but a fifth-year option's not cheap, and I was honestly surprised they picked it up. But they did, and then they drafted Isaac, who they really like. I'll say this about Isaac, and I don't know him. I've heard his backstory about his family and the team. The front office loves the guy. And so the Ravens have this tradition they call the Red Star. And what happens is every scout in the organization gets to put one red star on a potential draft pick. And so that guy is, as Eric DaCosta describes it, this red star is the guy that regional scout is essentially saying, character, ability, everything about this guy, I'm willing to risk my reputation that this is a guy we should pick. And I forget the name now of the regional scout, but he said Isaac was the red star guy for that scout. So when there's a red star guy picked by, and they all identify them, but they'll often say, they'll let us know when it's a red star guy. And Isaac was a red star guy for them. So they love his character. They love his ability. It turns out Owe helped draft him or recruit him to Penn State, rather.
Yep.
So I think he's got a chance to commit to play right away because they lost Jadeveon Clowney. Tyus Bowser was hurt all year, and he's kind of gone away. David Ajabo's been hurt most of his career. There's a chance there for an edge rusher to come right in and have an impact, and they're hoping that happens with Isaac.
And there's another element, too, about Isaac. And, look, I can talk about him probably at this stage exponentially better than you can because I'm around him every day. But, like, he can drop in and play pass coverage. Jack Ham and I would, on the broadcast, would rave about how he would get into the right spot and play pass coverage on a zone blitz. He's the kind of guy that gives a defensive coordinator options.
Well, that would be great for them because Tyus Bowser could do that too. He was a former basketball player at Houston. He's athletic, and he could definitely drop into coverage. But the last year and a half, he was just not healthy. And last year, he didn't play it down because he was not healthy. So if he can do that for them, that will be a big plus, and that will get them on the field even more.
Yeah, even more so. Now, going down, they got Tez Walker out of North Carolina, who had a mixed year because of the NCAA problems, from his transfer from Kent State. They got Rasheen Ely from Marshall. But then they got Nick Samek from Michigan State, whom I liked a lot, because I saw him play against Penn State every year. Overall, when they got to the third day of the draft, was there something that stuck out to you?
I mean, I think overall they actually like the kid T.J. Tampa, the cornerback there from Iowa State, who they got also in the fourth round, who I didn't think they thought would be there. I think they thought it was kind of a steal for them. And they're always looking for defensive backs. They tend to run out of them every year, and most teams tend to run out of them every year. I think, honestly, one of the things that surprised me about this team is DaCosta didn't make any trades, because he usually does. And he had also said he thought this was not a particularly deep draft because of NIL keeping people in school and the COVID year giving guys a fifth year and not as many people coming out early. He didn't see it as a particularly deep draft, but then he held on to all his picks, including 2 7th rounders. I was a little surprised they drafted a quarterback in the 6th round, but you know, that's something they might do. Devin Leary out of Kentucky, and I don't know how he'll fit in or if he'll fit in. But overall, I think they felt they got value at almost all of these picks. When you talk to them afterwards, and you know, that's what they like to say. They like to say he was value picky. We had him rated higher than where we got him, and so that's always going to be a plus for them. Samak's a guy who will be basically playing. I mean, he comes here behind Tyler Linderbaum, who's a all-pro center now, and he's a really, really good player. But I think they view him as a developmental guy, and they might kick the tires on him at guard because they've got guard issues. They lost both their starters. So they'll have a look at him there. They like to have those interior linemen be able to play across all three positions. So he's a big physical guy. That's what they like. Harbaugh loves maulers up front. And so I think they like that pick a lot in the 7th round.
Well, Samak can play guard. I mean, so that is, it's not like at Michigan State they'd have a lot of moving parts. So how do you feel about the makeup of this team right now? Look, they go all the way until Kansas City finally beat them. So they're well positioned to begin with. Do you feel like they're better now after this?
I mean, they're a good team. And as long, if Lamar Jackson stays healthy, they win a lot more than they lose. And it's just, you know, people get on him because he hasn't won in the playoffs, and that's fair, because whether it's his play or whether it's the play calling or whatever, they faltered in the playoffs with him, and that's just a fact, and they can't kind of run from that. It's a well-positioned team. I think the most significant thing, honestly, is on the defensive side, they lost Mike McDonald, their coordinator, who's the head coach of Seattle now, and he was considered this kind of boy wonder genius of defensive schematics, and now he's gone, and they've turned the defense to Zach Orr, 32 years old, played for the Ravens, then lost his career, ended short because he got a neck injury. They are really, really high on him as a future coach. Harbaugh has said that for years, but he's never called plays before, so it's his thing now, and they've got new position coaches at every level of the defense because the defensive staff kind of got raided. And so I think that's the biggest thing. The personnel is there. I think the offense absolutely is there. They added Derrick Henry. So you have this offense now that likes to run anyway, and you added Derrick Henry to Lamar Jackson's backfield, that's going to be tough to defend. I think the biggest question is, how does this new coaching staff on defense fit all the pieces together? They've got their pieces. They got Justin Madubuike up front. They got Roquan Smith in the middle of the defense. They got Kyle Hamilton at safety. They've got Pro Bowl players at all three levels, but they also have new coaches at all three levels, and they have some things to figure out on defense, but the talent's there to be a top AFC team again. There's no question about it. The question is, can they execute, and of course, can they stay healthy?
Finally, I do want to ask you about the Derrick Henry acquisition, because you know he gets into that backfield. Great name. Who knows how much is left in him? We're all going to find out. But what do you think he means on a couple different levels for Lamar Jackson and how this offense, especially in the red zone, can produce?
I mean, yeah, we'll see what he can produce. He almost took offense when someone suggested that. At his opening news conference, someone said something about the wear and tear and all the stuff over 30 years old, all the carries. And he said, hey, just keep watching. He's heard that talk, and I think he's kind of ready to prove it wrong. We'll see if he can. I mean, the fact is he's 30 and he's taken a lot of hits over the last few years. How he affects this offense, I mean, he brings an interesting dimension that he's different than Gus Edwards and he's different from J.K. Dobbins, and he's certainly, you know, with Lamar Jackson back there, things are going to be interesting to try to defend. I think the most interesting thing with those two is Jackson has generally operated out of a shotgun almost exclusively, because it's great for him to be able to read defense, decide on the RPO, whether he wants to keep or whether he wants to hand off. And Henry has been more of a traditional back with a quarterback under center, just get the ball and go. And they've got to figure out which works best for them. Henry hasn't done a lot of RPO stuff, and Jackson hasn't been under center much. And so one of them is going to have to adjust. And how that works will be interesting to watch.
Winning allows you to adjust. All right, so you'd be amazed what it means. Bo, absolute pleasure. Great as always. Appreciate it, and appreciate the insight. Have a great one.
All right, thanks. Good talking to you. Take care.
All right, Bo Smolka. Worked at Bucknell, by the way. Period of time. Another person that has a restraining order out in the suit. Should we be concerned at all that, like, 18 of the horses in the Kentucky Derby, like, also have, like, the suit's not allowed within 500 yards?
I think it's all concerning as long as, but, you know, as long as he doesn't, as long as he doesn't bother you.
He goes to the track and he screams, "Run faster!" Believe me, they're running as fast as they can away from you.
I figured it was for making faces at the horses in the paddock. And there was one-way mirrors.
The one-way mirror. The one-way mirror. They can't see it, but they sense he's there. All right. We'll take a break. This half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Spring has sprung, and it's time to dust off those insurance policies. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855 or visit our website at purdyinsurance.com to see what we can do for you.
It's great to have you with us. Yeah, we talked about Mike Gorman going out. Jack Edwards, last game for him last night as the Bruins TV voice. He's unfortunately for him, he's really struggled. His voice, and he's gone to doctors. They can't figure it out. They can't figure out why he's slurring his speech. They can't figure it out, and that's the reason why he's stepping aside. But because Game 7 is on ABC, that means no Nesson for Game 7, which means Jack Edwards and Andy Brinkley did their final game of the season last night, and for Jack Edwards, the final game of his Bruins career. So... it's interesting what they do, how this has really changed sports in a lot of ways in terms of what we view. They want to make sure that the cable entities or the networks themselves, but the cable entities especially. Get the exclusive. So they knock the local guys out after round one.
It used to be after the semifinals, didn't it?
Used to be, but yeah, they rolled it back. They rolled it back. But there's also been a flip side. Here's one that's actually gone the opposite. Bowl games. Realize that Fran Fischer only broadcast 6 bowl games in his career. You only did 6. I've done 17. And they went to bowl game after bowl game after bowl game. Poor Fran would sit there, knows the team like the back of his hand, would deliver an awesome broadcast if given the chance. He had to be the spotter for somebody or had to help out, whatever. He couldn't do the game. He finally, the first bowl game Fran did, the first one he did, was the 82 season, 83 Sugar Bowl, and the national championship win over Georgia. That was the first bowl game he ever broadcast. 1982. He'd been there since 1966. Amazing. Then when he came back the second time, he wasn't allowed to do the Rose Bowl in 94. It was only the network radio guys could do that. Then he did the other 5 bowl games after that. Well, I think he did a Fiesta Bowl, Citrus Bowl, Outback Bowl, things like that. Alamo Bowl, that was his last game. Jack and I, on the other hand, we've done 3 Rose Bowls together. Orange Bowl, Peach Bowl, Fiesta Bowl, Cotton Bowl, Alamo Bowl, Citrus Bowl, Outback Bowl, Gator Bowl, Pinstripe Bowl. We've done all these games. We've been allowed to. But back in Fran's day, he couldn't do it. That had to be, seriously, that had to be hard. You do an entire season and you're told you can't do that game. So I can feel for these guys right now that, their team's in the playoff making a run. Now they have to sit back and watch. And the guys doing it are doing a great job. But, you've been doing all year. You'd like to do it.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And the final half hour as we head into the weekend. Hey, stock up for the Kentucky Derby. They have hours of pre-race information that may mean that you can enjoy a lot of beverages. Imports Domestics Microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. Pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills. My 2 favorites, indeed second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. All right, and we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right. Nick Saban has been making the rounds, and he did a sit-down. I think this was in Tuscaloosa. I think this was on campus. It was put out by AL.com, Alabama's website. But this is a story about what it was like in his first year at Alabama.
If you remember back the first year that we were at Alabama, we lost to ULM. You may not even know what that stands for, University of Louisiana Monroe. And it was the most humiliating defeat, maybe, of my entire coaching career. I think we had 5 guys suspended by the NCAA. We had 3 more suspended for disciplinary reasons. We played horrible in the game. I was almost ashamed of how we represented the university and the program. We fumbled the ball 6 times. So we end up getting beat in the game. But so everybody's disappointed. Fans are disappointed. Coaches are disappointed. Players are disappointed. But when you're the coach, you have to go in the locker room after the game and try to inspire your guys when they didn't perform very well. Then you have to go to the press conference and try to explain to people why you played so poorly. Then you have to go to the recruiting room and try to talk to the recruits that it's not really going to be this way in the future. So then, after all that humiliation, I get in my car to drive home, and I don't have any gas in the car. So now I got to stop at a self-serve, put some gas in the car, and I used to wear my LSU national championship ring. So I go to pay the guy, and the guy says, "Wow, what's that ring?" And I said, "That's a national championship ring, and we're going to do the same thing here at Alabama." And the guy looks at me and says, "We'll never do it as long as that Nick Saban is the coach."
There you go. All right, everybody. Back after not being with us last week, the King.
All right. How's it going?
Fine, how are you?
Well, very busy. That's good. So anyone rioting there?
Here, things have been quiet here, and I think, Todd, things have been very quiet at Bucknell, too, right?
Yeah, this is like the last 2 days of finals at both schools around here. They're just ready to go home at this point.
Commencement's here is tomorrow here.
Yeah, same at UConn, but UConn had it. They had like arrested 24 people. They tell them they can't put tents up, but they put them up anyway. So the police come flying by our house Monday morning or Tuesday morning. They're just a long bunch of state troopers with a dumpster.
They just
6 a.m. they woke them all up and said, "Come on, you're going," and they threw all their tents away, and that was that. So the students are filing a grievance.
there hasn't even been, to my knowledge, an inkling of it here. It's been business as usual here. I finished teaching a little more than a week ago. I did my grades on Tuesday. And right now the town is busting at the seams because, you know, it's commencement week and it's another weekend here. Blue White weekend was followed by the United States Olympic Trials weekend, which was then followed by Luke Combs and 80,000 people in Beaver Stadium to see his concert. Now this weekend.
Are you kidding me? I thought they never did anything at Beaver Stadium except football.
No, this is the second time they've done a concert. Blake Shelton did one there in 2018, but it wasn't as attended. This one got 80,000 people Saturday night. And the weather
here
on
Saturday.
What a venue
to see a concert. Wow.
I mean, the weather here on Saturday was, it was, you know, it was misty. It was like 50, 52 degrees. And they came out in droves to see this.
Heck yeah. No, what a venue to see a concert. That's unbelievable. Wow. Yeah. That must have been great. Yeah, I wonder if I could pass your class.
Of course you could. You'd be fine.
Is that hard?
Look.
You know the professor.
What do you teach?
Sports broadcasting.
So what would the test be? What would the questions on the final be like?
There are no tests. You have projects. So there's 5 projects you have to do. You have to do a 2-minute sports cast, including a soundbite. You have to do a 1-minute field report that includes a soundbite. Play-by-play of a sport where you do your 3 best highlights of the game and then 2 minutes of sustained play-by-play. Because I tell everybody, look, if I have to listen to an entire game you guys do, I said, I'll jump from the building. it's because I got 22 people in class. Then they have to do a talk show. And then they have to do a second play-by-play of a completely different sport.
Wow, that's pretty good. So does, have you turned out any, like you know, Vin Scully's yet?
Well,
or Steve Jones's?
Yes. No, we've had a lot of people that have gone on and done some really good things out of the class. Amanda Lockwood is in charge of the ESPN college football coverage, like all of it, including their bowl games. Yep. She took the class.
How about that girl who was sitting in front of me when they dedicated that building to you?
Yeah, she's in TV. She's in TV. Hannah Mears took the class. She's now the Pittsburgh Pirates sideline person. I mean, there have been a lot of people like that have done things like that. A lot of these people have done pretty well.
Yeah. See, that's a really cool legacy to teach people and they move on. That's good.
Believe me, they got there on their own.
Yeah. They were students. I think you helped lead the way for them. That's, yeah. You know, being a teacher is very rewarding. So I look forward to something here. Somebody who wants to buy the company wants me to train the people that come in. They don't know anything about making nothing. And I can't wait for that. That's going to be fun.
Yeah. I mean, and to be honest with you, I'm pretty patient about the whole thing. I understand circumstances when something comes up or doesn't come up. And I think that, and another guy, well, Brian Tripp is another one. Brian Tripp is the play-by-play voice of Penn State hockey.
Yep.
Right? He took the class, and it was the voice of the Frozen Four in Westwood One. And so, I mean, like, I've been around a lot of really good people that have done some good stuff, so.
Cool. But you have to have certain talents. You have to have a photographic memory. So, Todd, are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah, so I'm at a UMass game. This is like 30 years ago, right? 40? How long ago were you in the A-10?
No, it was in the 80s into the early 90s. So.
Mark Hill was the coach. Yeah. So Steve's announcing, and my, ex-wife, whatever she is, that's a nice word right now for her, she goes up behind Steve and covers his eyes while he's announcing the basketball game. He continued to announce the game, and he couldn't see. That's talent.
I call him as I see him. If I don't see it, I make it up.
But I've seen him prepare. I mean, I've seen the stuff most people don't see. I mean, when we're in New York, and he's got all these cards all over the bed, just studying names, putting numbers to names and all that. There's got to have a photographic memory, but you got to put the work in, and you put the work in, and you can't teach all that. You got to put the. It's not just all show up and score. You know, it's not. It's very impressive to watch.
Well, I do tell them that. Look, take care of the little things, and the big things take care of themselves. So anything that you can think of that could eventually make a difference, I said, make sure you're ready for it. Don't bypass steps to get to the big step. The big step will take care of itself.
Yeah, don't force the big calls.
Right. Yeah, and you can't do that. And I know people that have, in their own way, scripted the big call.
Yep.
And they end up regretting it because it doesn't sound as natural. And I've told the class, pure and simple. I said, look, if you make a great call in a memorable moment, they'll remember it forever. He says, if you botch it up, they'll just remember it was a great play.
So right, exactly. Don't try. There's one, the Yankee announcer.
John Sterling?
No, I love John Sterling. The one who has his own show.
Michael Kay?
Yeah. When he says, see ya. That doesn't sound natural to me.
Yeah, that's his that's his signature call for a home run. So,
yeah, I know. It was never read that where John Sterling having a different for each home run, and or there she goes, or he had a natural way of making it very fun.
A-bomb for A-Rod.
Yeah, that's some of the stuff he come up with. Did you see when he got hit by a foul ball?
I did.
Oh, God, it hit me. Ooh, that hurts. Punked him right off the head.
I'll tell you right now, we've only had seven, I've done the spikes now for, 17 years?
Yeah.
We've only had seven foul balls come into the booth. That's it. But they come in like they're rockets.
Yeah, it only takes one. Right?
So I've been in the booth for four of them. Because, you know, there are three others went in there, and I wasn't in the booth at the time. It was the middle innings. I wasn't working. Right? I caught two of them. Right?
Cool.
That hurt. Oh, no, that hurt.
Right? Remember when you were playing first base in Little League? And you got hit.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, ground ball. Bounced up.
Oh, let it go.
Yeah. Right. But, you know, and of course, you know, what do you do when you catch it or whatever goes in? You always look down to a little kid and you drop the ball down to him. All right. It's like I was at this game where this fan, somebody hit a foul ball for the opposing team. It was a Pirates game. And the fans, everybody's like, throw it back. And I said, why don't you give it to a little kid? Throw it back. They don't want the ball. All right, we'll come back. A little trivia in a moment. We continue. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
You want your young athlete to get the most out of life and NIL. You need a roadmap, a strategic approach. NIL Game Changers help student-athletes earn while they learn in their collegiate journey. Driven by former student-athletes and coaches who work as NIL sports agents and content media designers, they'll guide both student and family, starting with high school students looking toward college and those already in college. Get a seasoned team of marketing experts with a background in athletics and coaching. Visit NILGameChangers.org, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
All right. Half hour brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Stock up for the big weekend now. All right. Trivia time. Let's see. Who gets to go first? Why don't we let Kevin go first?
Kevin. Please don't call me Kevin.
Kibotsky. Anyway.
I tell my wife that all the time. So she only calls me Kevin when she's mad at me. So, anyway.
Kevo.
What team won the very first NBA game in 1946?
I will vote the New York Knickerbockers, or whatever they were called then.
Fort Wayne Pistons.
Ooh, good one.
Todd thinks the Knicks?
No, I said the Knicks, and he said the Fort Wayne Pistons.
Oh, Fort Wayne Pistons. You guys sound alike. Okay. The Knicks is correct. Ding, 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 ding. Boy, well, they look good this year, huh?
Yeah, they're playing great. They don't have Julius Randle. They're playing great. I give them a lot of credit for it.
Yeah, it's that kid Bronson. He's really good.
Brunson was great when he was at Villanova, for goodness sakes.
Is that where he played?
No. Oh, yeah. Wow. He was great.
Man, Philly's a mess.
Well.
Big problems.
Yeah, I understand. Name the last horse to win the Triple Crown.
Affirm.
Smarty Jones.
Justified.
I couldn't think of the most recent one.
Justify?
Justify. Won the Triple Crown. Right? The... Okay? Way to go, Justify.
I don't watch horses at all. I don't know. only Smarty Jones is the only horse I know.
Smarty Jones lost the Belmont by...
That's right.
A nose.
Yeah, but I won like $100 on him.
Well, there you go. See? Perfect. No, it's a 2018 Justify one.
I picked him. I didn't know anything about it. It's just his last name was Jones, and he won the stupid thing. So I'm watching on TV, and I'm like, you know, like laying on my side. And they around the stretch, they come. I jumped up. Go, Smarty, go! You know, like, oh my God, he's gonna win. And he won. So won $100. Anyway.
Well, Justify did not race as a 2-year-old, and Justify won every race he ran in. He was 6-for-6. But the Santa Anita Derby, even though he finished first, he was disqualified because of a medical violation. Everything else, though, finished first.
Hasn't horse racing just gone in the pits? I mean, with the horses dying and all the drugs they give them and the steroids and the...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's...
It's sad, really. I mean, they're giving them all these steroids and they're muscle-bound, but their bones can't handle the... They end up having to put half of them. Well, I'm exaggerating. I know that, but a lot of horses get put down because their bodies break.
Well, I know Dick Girardi and I are talking about when Penn State plays at USC UCLA, and they will play at USC and UCLA some weekend in January or February. We're going to go over to. There's going to be an off day if they don't play, so we're talking about we're going to go to Santa Anita and check it out.
He likes that stuff. When you guys were at Mohegan Sun,
he's the best.
He was like a kid in a candy shop.
He loved it. He loved it.
Yeah.
So, Todd, what's
Next
your question?
Who holds the major league record for most walks in a game?
As a pitcher or as a player?
As a hitter.
As a hitter. Wow.
Jose Canseco.
I'm Jose Canseco. Was that Jim Carrey in the movie, what, Liar, Liar? I am going to say... This is going to be crazy. I'll go with Jeff Bagwell.
How about Dick McAuliffe?
Dick McAuliffe.
Ooh.
Avon, Connecticut zone.
No, it was, and the only reason I know this is because I was looking on a This Date in Baseball thing earlier this week. Andre Thornton had 6 walks back in 1983 for the Indians.
Wow, what a game, huh?
It did go 16 innings.
That would help.
I wonder if he even swung. Wow.
That's a good day at the office if you just stand there with your bat in the stroller for 6 walks.
Yeah, exciting. How was your day, son? Good. Probably made 6 errors at the field.
So technically you went 0-for-0 at the plate.
Hey, Red Sox are looking pretty good, huh?
Oh, I'll tell you right now, that water they shipped in from Lourdes. I went and saw them play at PNC Park.
Yeah.
I looked around and go, I felt like I was in the movie Major League. I said, who are these guys?
Yeah, another guy went on the radio. He said he thought he was watching a Little League baseball game.
And they won the game 6-1.
Yeah.
Nothing exciting
about them, but they got great starting pitching.
They can pitch, and that's what they had this day. They can pitch, which is big. All right. Sounds good.
Okay, till next week, guys. Have a great weekend.